Okay, so welcome to Proverbs. This is one of my favorite books of the Bible. And in fact, it's actually the favorite book of a lot of people. And I think the primary reason for this is because it's obviously practical. When you're reading it, it's very, very easy to take it and use it to make changes in your life. And so that makes it much more fun because you immediately see the value of it. So the title of this is Seeing the End from the Beginning. And this is something that's going to be a reoccurring theme for us as we go through. Let's just talk a little bit about the book, and then I want to, as quickly as possible, get into the actual text itself. So just a little bit of introduction. So you probably already know, just from reading the book a little bit, it's a book that's mostly written by Solomon. What you may or may not have known is actually King Hezekiah seems to have had a part in this book later in its life. So there's a part in the book later on where it tells us specifically that this was done by Hezekiah's men. So not just Solomon, but also Hezekiah played some part. How much part he played, we don't know. We know from that point forward to the end of the book, it's for sure Hezekiah's, but if he had some part in arranging the first part, don't know. But it doesn't matter. It comes to us by the way of God. Either way, is an inspired book. So those are the people that are involved in this. What's the goal of the book? Well, the goal is wisdom. So to see the end from the beginning. And that's what I want you to think about. Every time you see the word wisdom, don't just think knowledge or understanding. I want you to think long-term view, farsight. Farsighted, being able to see the end from the beginning, to stand at the beginning of a path and know where it's going to end up with a goal to making better choices because you know what's going to happen at the end. So make choices now based on what's going to happen at the end. All right, so the writing style, a proverb, if you just look Oxford Dictionary, a short, well-known, pithy saying stating a general truth or piece of advice. It's pretty bad when you go to a dictionary and you have to use the dictionary to look up other words and the definition. I don't use the word pithy too often. But the idea is it gets to the core of things. It's like the center part of a plant or a tree. That's what the pith is. So the idea is this is a saying that boils it down, that concentrates it to the core matter, the core elements. It's not going to elaborate and get into a ton of details. It's just trying to give you a little concise principle. All right. Now, Proverbs is Hebrew poetry. If you've not been exposed to Hebrew poetry before, it's very different than English poetry that you've learned in school. Hebrews were not interested in rhyming words so that it had kind of like a musical sound to it. They were interested in rhyming thoughts. So one line would have a very close connection with the line after that as far as the image that it would create in your mind, the thought that it would conjure up. And so people who've spent a lot of time studying this have broken it down when you look at the verses into three different forms. There's actually a fourth one, but the first one is synonymous. And the idea is that if you look at one of the Proverbs, I don't know if you've noticed, most of them are basically two lines. So oftentimes the second line is just kind of a repeat of the first line. All right. Sometimes if you think of it as like a coin, instead of seeing the same side of the coin twice, the first line is going to give you one side and the second line is going to give you the other side. That's the antithetic. So an example of the synonymous might be the righteous are blessed by the Lord. The just will endure forever. Okay? Same kind of idea stated twice in two different words. Antithetic might be the righteous are blessed by the Lord, but the wicked will be wiped off the earth. All right? That's the other side of the coin giving you that view. Synthetic is going to be where the second line, it looks a little bit different. Like it's just going to add a little bit more thought to this. This one's pretty rare, and when you see it, you'll know it because it won't look like the other two that you see most often. There's another one that's called chiastic, and it's very similar to actually either the other two. The only difference is when it gives you the second line, it reverses the order. So an example, the righteous are blessed by the Lord. The Lord favors those that are holy. Okay, it's the same idea, but it's actually just flipped in reverse order. And so if you like drew a picture of it, it makes an X. And so the Greek letter for X is chi, and that's the reason they call it chiastic. So why do you care about this? Any ideas how this might be helpful? So, in a picture, if the first verse, the first line is something like this, the holy will be blessed by the Lord. And in the next one, I see something like, the righteous will be, and I can't figure it out. I don't know what the last part of that last line is. How does this help me? Well, I know it's going to be something like B, because this is something where it's synonymous. I'm just restating the same thing again. All right? If I end up seeing something that's more like the wicked will be, so I've got the opposite of A here, and I don't know what that is. Again, I have a clue just based off the structure of the text. So this is not just a bunch of little fancy words to help you have some kind of technical nerdy understanding of structure. This is so you can understand what's being said. You don't need to remember the names as much as you need to remember the patterns, and use the patterns to help you figure out what's happening in the verses that are harder to understand. Especially things that have agricultural references. Not too many of you are farmers, so you will struggle a little bit more with some of the agricultural references. So those kinds of clues can be very helpful to you in that. All right. So that's the only reason why we go through that. Make sure you use it. The outline of the book, the first 9 chapters kind of stand alone. They're almost like a narrative, like he's telling a story. One verse flows into the next verse, kind of like we're used to reading. The rest of the book, from 10 to the end of the book, is more of what people think about as Proverbs. Just a random verse here on some topic, another random verse on some other topic. It's almost like the person was struggling to actually keep a train of thought, and they're just kind of bouncing around all over the place. That's the way it feels, and that's the way a lot of people think about it. But we're talking about some of the wisest people in the world. It's not random. All right, so the rest of it you can break down according to author. Solomon's got the bulk of it from 10 to 24. Hezekiah, his men have some of Solomon. So Solomon didn't like pin them and arrange them, but Hezekiah's men were involved in 25 through 29, and Hezekiah's men probably also contributed to that. The last 2 chapters were given by Agur and then Lemuel. And so we don't actually know who those people were. They could be references to Solomon or some other king. These are other people that are involved in this. These could be real people, not just references to Solomon or to Hezekiah. We know from the text that Solomon had a lot of kings that came and visited him to hear his wisdom. But he was also gathering wisdom from them as well. So these could very well just be kings from other countries who had their own collection of proverbs that Solomon kind of assimilated and gave credit to them here because of what they did. Or again, it could be Hezekiah. All right. So how are we going to study this? We're just going to go through the first 9 chapters. We're going to start on this today, and I hope to get through most of chapter 1. And then when we get to the rest of the book, we're going to actually go through the verses by theme because we don't have a lot of time. We're going to focus on we're going to gather all of the verses on one topic, and we're going to look at those together because that's the most efficient way to go through the book. So you can think of that as kind of like a beginning view, a beginning look of Proverbs. Now, I think the better but more advanced version is to actually just read through it naturally. There's a reason why the verses are next to each other, but you need to understand what the verses mean before you can start looking for the connections between the verses. That's the reason why that's kind of the advanced version, and it's going to take more time, and we don't have time for that. But what I want you to be able to do later is just go through and read the book naturally and look for the connections between two. And that will help you find applications that you will not be able to find with the way that we're doing this, just because we don't have time. All right, for those of you who've not had me before, I always do thought questions. I may have a few what, when, where, but they're going to be mostly why and how, contrast, compare. You guys are way past fill in the blank. You're way past true, false, multiple choice. To be honest, that's insulting to you at this point. You need to be developing your mind where you understand the underlying concepts, the underlying principles, so that you can build on that. So that's what we're going to focus on. That's what we're going to try to develop. Now, the consequence of that is you're going to get to some questions, and you may not be able to figure out where in the world I was going. That's okay. That's expected. Don't panic. Don't be worried and upset about that. Do your best. Talk to your parents. That's actually one of the things I intended, that when you get to a difficult question, you ask mom, dad, what do you think about this? And then call me, email me, text me. I'll be glad to help as well. So if you get stuck, don't worry about that. Do the best you can and focus on that. All right. Also, because it's questions, obviously I'm going to be asking a lot of questions in class. So please do your best. Make sure that you're prepared and that you've given some thought to this so that you can answer the questions. If you are prepared, I'm going to do my part. If you're prepared, this will be a much better class than it would be if you're not. So for your own understanding and for the understanding and the goodness of this class, make sure that you come prepared and willing to talk, all right? And of course, you will probably give some answers that are not quite right, but I think you'll find that I'm pretty gracious in handling them, so don't worry about that either. And I don't think anybody's going to point and laugh because they're in the same boat as you. All right, that's it for introduction. Let's actually get into the book. So open your Bibles and your questions, and let's dig in. So the book actually introduces itself, Proverbs 1, verse 1, starting in there. So I want you to tell me in your own words, what is the purpose of Proverbs? And then to whom is it directed and why would they need it? So let's start with the first one. What's the purpose of Proverbs anyway?
To gain wisdom in order to apply it for discretion and righteousness.
All right. Very good. Now, to whom is it aimed? Who's the audience? Who is this person targeting?
Younger people.
Younger people. All right. That's good. You can actually make it a little bit more specific.
A young man.
Yes, a young man. All right. So what happens if you're female? Does this mean this doesn't have any application to you whatsoever? No, no, not at all. You're going to find yourself going through the exact same things, but there's going to be some things that are going to be very unique to the male perspective and the male issues of life. All right. So for girls, how do they make application? Well, we're often going to be talking about how does a guy look at a girl? How does he deal with the girl? So for the girls, what that tells you is this is the person you need to be or not be. All right. And you're going to actually be seeing it through a guy's eyes and how this affects him. But it will not be any trouble for you to actually adapt it. And in fact, it's a compliment to you that says that, oh, you're the one who can actually handle the adaption a little bit easier. So this one's going to be targeted directly towards the guys. So it's written from a father-son perspective, but we're not going to struggle making application to that. So Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom. So we're not just running through a list, running through some words. We're actually absorbing this. We're understanding this. This is changing who we are. This is the goal of this book. In what way? To receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, equity, to give prudence to the simple, to the young man, knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase in learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. To understand a proverb, an enigma, the words of the wise, and the riddles. So the two, you can keep picking up on those. That's the purpose. That's the reason for the book and the people that it's written to. All right, so why do the young need it most of all? Well, you have the biggest decisions of life right in front of you. And you are the least equipped that you will be for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. You're going to grow so much more and learn so much more beyond where you are now. But you don't get to access any of that now. You don't get to use it now. You can't tap into the 60-year-old, 40-year-old version of you and use it now. So what do? Well, you listen to the 40-year-old, 60-year-old, 80-year-old who's already been there, done that. And that's the whole point of this book, is to give you access to that so you can make these good decisions now that are going to define the rest of your life. Who you date, who you marry, whether or not to be a Christian, even like what kind of job, what kind of career path am I going to go down? How do I look at life, deal with life? The most imminent and practical questions, you're dealing with them right now. And this book's trying to help you with that. And it's trying to give you something that you desperately need. These problems don't go away as you get older. It's not like you have temptations that you'll never feel for the rest of your life. No, old people have those temptations too, but they have experience and they have some wisdom they're going to bring to them. Does that mean they're done? They don't need this book anymore? Not at all. Notice what he says. A wise man will increase in learning. So it's not just to the simple. It's not just to the young. It's even the people that are old and wise and mature. They're not done. They need to keep learning and growing too. All right. Number two. What's the beginning? What is the foundation of real knowledge? Where does this all start? Why does it start there?
Fear of the Lord.
All right, the fear of the Lord. Very good.
And I think the reason that it starts there is because our search for wisdom pivots on that. If we fear the Lord, that's what causes us to search for wisdom and also apply it to our lives.
Very good, very good. So it provides the foundation as far as like where these things derive from, where they come from, but it also provides the motivation. So the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. So Psalm 14:1, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Notice the result. They are corrupt. They have done abominable works. There is none who does good. So this is the fundamental truth from which all knowledge is derived and guided. Sooner or later, there's going to be something you're going to read and you're going to go, no, that ain't right. That's going to be the thought that goes through your head. And at that point, a choice is in front of you. You're going to say, yeah, obviously it's not right. And you're going to go on your way. Or you can say, Solomon knew what he was talking about because God knows what he's talking about. I believe God. I trust God. I know he cares for me. I know he loves me. I know he's trying to give me the best. So even though this doesn't make any sense to me at all, I'm going to accept it on faith. I'm going to do what he says anyway. Can you do that if you don't believe in God? No. Hebrews 11, 1 to 6. talks about the importance of faith, that it's the substance of things not seen. And without faith, it is impossible to please him. Because if you don't believe him, you're not going to do anything he says. Because sooner or later, he's going to ask you to do something that's either hard or doesn't make sense. And only faith is going to carry you across that bridge. So you have to have that to get started. So the other thing is, remember, when you see wisdom, what is it I want you to think? Seeing the end from the beginning. Well, who's seen the end of everything? Who was at the beginning of everything? God was. He is the expert, by far, from experience, on all of these topics. So again, if we don't care what he thinks or what he says, it's not going to help us through any of these things. This book's going to be of very limited value if we don't fear the Lord. All right, any thoughts or questions before we get to number three? All right. So what kind of people listen and gain knowledge? And then how are these people described who refuse to listen? What's their motivation? So let's start with the first one. What kind of people listen and gain knowledge?
Verse 5 says, a wise man will hear and increase in learning.
All right. Very good. And what about the ones who don't listen, who refuse to listen? Who are they? Maybe?
There. In verse 7 it says, but fools despise wisdom and instruction.
All right. And what's the motivation? What is the wise person trying to do? What is it that they want?
It's the acceptance of God or the rejection of him.
Yeah, and then just specifically what's in the verse, he's just trying to get wiser still. He's trying to grow and build. How about the foolish person? What is their perspective? How are they looking at this?
They despise it.
They despise it. Okay, very good. So there's a few words in here that are a little bit more colorful than some of the words we typically use. And we want to also understand those words so we can see the full range of color of these pictures. So a wise man will hear and increase in learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. So the wise are continually increasing, abounding more and more, as Paul would say to the Thessalonians, but fools despise. So the Brown Driver Briggs, a Hebrew dictionary, BDB, says that despise means to despise or hold in contempt as insignificant. That's what the Hebrew word actually means here. Now, despise, I know you know it's bad, that like I hate it. But what it specifically means is you think it's little, it's insignificant. So imagine like a little child, like, you know, puts together like a little toy, like out of a plastic fork or something. Like, here, I made you this. And you're like, oh, yeah, that's wonderful. And, you know, you put it in the trash or whatever. You might keep it because you love them and you care about them. But the toy itself, the little thing they made, it has no value. Its value is the person who gave it to you. Right? That's just an example. What happens is, like Esau, he despised his birthright. This is insignificant. This is of no value. So he was happy to trade it away for a bowl of beans. Okay? That's what despise means, to think it's little, insignificant. Another word you're going to see a lot, which is kind of the other side of the coin, it's also negative, is disdain. Disdain means you are superior to the thing that's, I am above this. This is so far beneath me, I will not touch it. All right? That's what disdain means. So look for those words. Don't think of them as just negative, but the person saying it's of no value or they're so superior to the other thing that we're talking about. So this is what fools do. They see no value in wisdom. It's not going to help them. This is a worthless thing. All right, so graceful ornaments, verses 8 through 9. My son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother, for they will be a graceful ornament on your head and chains about your neck. How does that work? How do we go from instruction of your father and law of your mother to graceful ornament on your head and chains about your neck? Do you know what that verse means? How is it that they will be those things?
I think, so chapter 3 and verses 13 through 15 talk about how precious wisdom is and that it's, mm-hmm. it will exceed everything above silver and gold and rubies and that sort of thing. So I think that if you have that wisdom, everybody can see it and will be able to see how valuable it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. So if I've got a crown on my head, would you notice? Yeah. If I had a beautiful gold corn crown with like jewels set on it, would you know? Sure. If I had like these huge gold chains with like sapphires and rubies and stuff set in it, would you notice? Yeah. Those are things that are of great value. Now here's the thing. It's not obvious that that value's there. When your mom and dad are talking to you and giving you correction, you're like, oh, thank you. This is a beautiful crown I'll be able to put on my head. This is a beautiful chain I'll be able to... No, it's not obvious to you. It was not to me, at least. That this was something that was of great value. But it is But again, just like we have to trust God to a certain extent, not with the unquestioning level that we do God, but we also have to trust our parents and we have to listen to them and trust that someday the wisdom that they're providing us, maybe not right now, but when we follow it, when we apply it, when we walk in those steps, it will elevate us and separate us from everybody else. Everybody else will see it and it will be like a crown on our head. Now, do you believe it? Do you accept it? If you don't, can you take it by faith that this is what God said? All right, so this is the promise of what it will be. So if we obey wisdom, it will produce these obvious, evident behavior that everybody's going to be able to see, even if they don't understand it. All right, let's get into verses 10 through 19. So one of the first things that gets in the way of wisdom, that's a roadblock, is greed. All right, we have a very extreme picture that's put in front of us. So do the robbers and murderers of this passage know that they lie in wait for their own blood and that they lurk secretly for their own lives? This one's an easy one.
No, otherwise they wouldn't be doing
this. That's right. They would not be doing this if they knew this. So they're forfeiting their own lives, but they have no idea. This is an unwitting suicide. So my son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait to shed blood. Let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol. Anybody know what Sheol means? Okay, it's the Hebrew word for, literally it's the unseen. All right, this is the realm of the dead. So when they swallow them up like Sheol, they're saying, let us swallow them up like the grave, like death. All right, this is their persona of what they're trying to be, like the Grim Reaper. We're going to just swallow them. And whole, like those who go down to the pit. So in other words, a reference to the grave. The idea you go in, but you don't come out. All right. We shall find all kinds of precious possessions. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast in your lot among us. Let us all have one purse. All right? Like, you know how that works out. All the people with one purse get picked off one by one, until there's only one person left standing. All right, my son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your foot from their path, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird, but they lie in wait for their own blood. They lurk secretly for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who is greedy for gain. It takes away the life of its owners. So when people go down that path, it will destroy them. If you look at most gangs, average lifespan, 16, 20, 25, if they're lucky. All right, this is the lifestyle that destroys people, whether we're talking about prison, death, or the habits that often go along with it that affect us so as well. And most people don't see it, or they just don't care. Maybe they don't think there is an alternative, that there's another way, that it's not for them. In the picture here, I want you to think about it as a bird. If somebody's a trapper and they lay a trap out, birds see it, they see him doing it. I ain't stepping in that. Birds are smart enough to not do that. But yet, what about these people? Here's something that's laid out in front of them, and they're dumber than the bird. They don't even have enough sparks to stay out of the trap that's laid out right in front of them. So I think that's a picture that should stab at our heart and say, I don't want to be that kind of person. I don't want to be that kind of foolish person who just walks headlong into this trap. I want off that path into a different path. All right. Now, I don't know about you, but we haven't withdrawn from anybody who is guilty of robbery or murder in a long, I don't think ever. So how do we make application of this verse?
It's not only robbery and murder, but malintent for other people.
Okay. All right, so I don't have this here, but one other thing that you can think about, Jesus described the devil as a murderer from the beginning. What did he do in the beginning that was murder? Well, he deceived Adam and Eve, and he killed them spiritually. He sent them to hell, but he didn't lay a finger on them. We can do eternal damage to somebody. And it has nothing to do with like a physical violence that's obvious. All right? So Isaac's point, what else? Noah, do you have your hand up?
It can just mean any temptation. It doesn't have to be robbery or murder.
Okay. All sin is going to be destructive to us. But he, notice how he generalizes this at the very end of this. So we have this very specific picture, but then at the end he says, so are the ways of everyone who is greedy for gain. So I don't want you to think just about somebody who's in the hood, that's selling drugs, and that's part of a gang. I want you to think about the person with the white collar and the tie that's on Wall Street. And that he's cutting corners, he's breaking the law, he's cheating, he's stealing, and he's taking money from people. He is also on that same path. Even though it's not obvious, and even though he probably won't get gunned down in the streets, he will also ultimately suffer a fate similar to that as well. It's harder to see, uses a little bit more imagination, It's going to require a little bit more faith because it's harder to see, but this is the path of those folks as well. All right, Michael.
Malachi brings the reference of, will you rob God? And that's giving God less than what is due to him.
Yeah.
So when you bring robbery into it, is we can approach it from another perspective. Are we giving God less than he deserves? And to the second point there, are we placing stumbling blocks? So are we robbing God, or are we tripping up our brother?
Yeah.
And so both sides of that are that
answer. Very good. Very good. Thank you. All right, good answers. So it's something that's very general, requires a little bit more imagination, but the consequences are the same. So on this point of desiring to be rich, anyone who's greedy for gain, notice the warning here in 1 Timothy 6, verses 6 through 19. It talks about those who desire to be rich, they will fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. All right. Again, white collar tie on Wall Street. This applies to him as well. It's a different kind of sorrow and destruction, but it happens to him just the same. All right. Let's get into verses 20 through 33 here, the last section. So let's look at the end. Let's walk down this path and let's see where this ends up. Let's look at the end of foolishness and wisdom. So wisdom, this is the first time where we see her personified as a woman. Wisdom calls aloud outside. She raises her voice in the open square. Is it really a woman? No. This is poetic, figurative language. We're looking at wisdom as if she was a woman. She's raising her voice in the open square. She cries out in the chief concourses, the chief walkways, the chief paths. At the openings of the gates in the city, she speaks her words. How long, you simple ones, will you love simplicity? For scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge. Turn at my rebuke. Surely I will pour out my spirit on you. I will make my words known to you. So, if she's personified as a woman, as we see here, why is it important that she raises her voice in the open squares, that she cries out in the chief concourses? What's being emphasized here? What's the point?
She's making herself known.
She's making herself known. Good.
She's taking away an excuse for people who don't listen to her.
That's right. That's right. So, and the thing I was looking for, Isaac, is I wanted you to emphasize more, not just that she's making herself known, but she's easy to see, easy to hear. She's where everybody is. Think about the main pathway through a town, the gates of the city. By the way, that's another reference that has special imagery associated with it. The gates of the city would often have the elders, like the most important people of the city, and that's where you went to for all your problems. That's where court was held. That's where the judges sat. So when you see the gates of the city, not only do you think about like the opening billboard sign, like the kind of like, hey, welcome to our city. I want you to think this is where power sits. This is where influence, this is where judgment and discretion is meted out. All right. So there's that aspect of it as well. Everybody's going through there and she's there too. All right. So where all the paths intersect, the concourses, she's there. So very public, very accessible. There's no excuse for not having access to her. She's making herself easy to get to. So, if she's so accessible, then why don't more people access her? Why don't they use her? Why don't they talk to her? Why don't they listen to her? Why don't they accept her wisdom?
Because most people don't see the value of wisdom. I think that's another reason why using a woman as the personification of this is good, is because, especially back in ancient times, women weren't seen as very valuable. They were just, they weren't known for their big wisdom and everything, but here she did. So nobody usually wants to listen to her.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit more. So just y'all keep chewing on this idea. Why is it a woman? Why not a man? Why not a boy? Why not something else? Why this image? We're going to come back to that. And I want y'all to keep thinking about that a little bit more. So at the end of the day, people don't want to hear what she has to say. That's why. They don't like the results. They don't like the consequences. They want to go their own path. She's the wisdom, requires sacrifice. It requires you giving up some things. And it's not pleasant, not in the short term. How long, you simple ones, will you love simplicity? All right, and the idea is, like, think about simple as the opposite of, like, complex or detailed. Hey, look, I'm just going with what's right in front of me. I'm not thinking beyond a day in front of this. Just like, what do I feel like? That's what I do. All right, that's a simple person. Scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge. I have called and you refused. This is not people were dumb. This is people didn't want to hear. They refused it. They understood and they looked the other way. I've stretched out my hand and no one regarded because you disdained. And there's our word there. this stuff, I'm so above that. That's the picture I want you to see with disdain. People looking down their nose at wisdom, they think they're so much better than it. They would have none of my rebuke. Again, they hated knowledge, did not choose the fear of the Lord, not have any of the counsel, and despised it, looked down on it, didn't see the value. So people didn't like it, they didn't value her correction, and frankly, they liked and enjoyed and delighted in the path that they were already going. So I like this verse from Hebrews 11, 24, 26. Moses refused what the passing pleasures of sin. Absolutely, sin is more fun at first. In the first 5 minutes, the first day, but sooner or later, it catches up with you. And it's a whole lot worse. And that's in this life. We're not even talking about the life to come. So, the key is, are you willing to take the long view? Are you willing to take exercise, enough discipline, enough self-control, enough wisdom to go, wait a minute, this looks like this is going to be fun, but where is this going to go? Where am I going to be a month from now, a year from now, if I go down this path? All right, let's look at the result. What happens when people reject wisdom? How does wisdom react? And if you've never seen this before, this can be shocking. Wisdom says, when you disdain me, I will also laugh at your calamity. I will mock you when your terror comes. Not a matter of if, when. When your terror comes, like a storm, and your destruction comes like a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you, then they will call out to me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but they will not find me. Because they hated knowledge, they did not choose the fear of the Lord, they would have none of my counsel and despise my every rebuke. Okay, how do we reconcile that with our view of God? Wait a minute. I thought that God wants everybody to be saved. But here we see wisdom turning its back on people who are reaching out to him, saying, please help me, please save me. Wisdom like, whatever. So how do we reconcile this with 2 Peter 3:9? Does God want everybody to be saved? He doesn't want anybody to perish. He wants everybody to repent. He's patient. Yeah, absolutely. That's what 2 Peter 3:9 says. And are there extreme examples of God forgiving very wicked people? We've been talking about this in Bible drill. What about King Manasseh? What about the Apostle Paul when he was Saul persecuting the church? Manasseh burning his own children alive, sacrificing infants and babies. Yeah, God forgave them because they were willing to be saved. So how do we reconcile this? How do we harmonize wisdom's refusal to help people with God's love and mercy that we see very clearly in other places? Because absolutely, this wisdom is an expression of God.
Well, when they come conduct to wisdom, it represents judgment day, and it's already too late. They've had all their chances.
Okay. All right. We are out of time. So, I don't even have time to respond to what Noah said. So I want you all to think about this, and this is what we're going to open up next time. So how do we harmonize these two things? There's a very important lesson here. All right, thank you all for your preparation and your participation. I look forward to seeing you next time. Put a mark where we are in your lesson. Make sure you're 15 questions ahead of us. And if you're always 15 questions ahead of where we were, where we ended, you'll be okay. All right, thanks. See you all.